guys, welcome back to the DM. On today's episode, we have a special guest, costume designer Anne Dixon. Before we get started, Anne, would you let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and how you got your start?
Sure. First, thanks so much for having me, Audrey and Tyree. How did I get started? My God. Well, that's a few moons ago. I graduated in art and design from the University of Arts in London in England. Then I came back to Canada. Then I was kind of like a gypsy in theater for a while. And I was, you know, I did, it was a great foundation because I did some cutting, some seamstressing, some millinery, a little dyeing, a little bit of everything. So it was a really great start. And then I started being an assistant designer. And then I started designing. My first design gig, I was actually cutting at a small regional theater. And it was for cabaret. And then the costume designer was let go. And then I was hired. And of course, what a great way to start with cabaret. Then if I did really well, they would give me the next play, which I did get, which was Twelfth Night from Shakespeare. And then I just traveled around across Canada and different gigs. Every 6 weeks, I mean, I would be packing my little Honda Civic at the time and just traveling wherever the next gig would be. And then I was hired with the CBC, which is a national television network in Canada. And I had, those were in the days when they still did a lot of programming themselves. I had great opportunities to do series, to do some films, actually to do some dance, ballet, and some skating. And I think probably about 5 years or 6 years afterwards, I left and then I went freelance. And I've been freelance ever since. And now the gypsy part of me is not so much going across the country, but maybe going around the world and doing different different films wherever I go.
Wow. Nice. That's an incredible story. Well, jumping right into, you know, The Dead Don't Hurt, we were lucky enough to get to watch that. My first question has to deal with that is, when filming a period piece, you know, how much time do you try to allow for research? And where are places you pull inspo from for educating yourself about a specific period of time?
One good thing about The Dead Don't Hurt, in a way, because it's an independent film, Vico had a hard time getting the financing. So every month was like, okay, we're going next week. And like, nope, nope. Then it was like, oh my God. So it took about, I think, nearly, oh, I don't remember now, 8 months or so before we finally got going. So that gave me a really good chance to really do a lot of research. And I always start off by doing these extensive boards, these mood boards, because to me, it's important to do them because it's a visual language and we're into visuals. And like when I say green, your green might be totally different than my green. So at least if we have something there, we can kind of go, yes, I like this, I don't like that, and so forth. And then also when an actor comes into for the first time, usually we're the first one that they meet and they come into our fitting rooms, I usually, you know, try and do like the whole walls are all plastered with all the boards and not just their character, but the whole world of what we're going to be filming. And then they can slowly start kind of getting themselves into the world that we're going to try and recreate. Now, where did I get my research? The thing is, it's a bit difficult in this one because it was the 1860s and also the 1830s. We had a lot of worlds. It wasn't just a linear thing. In the 1830s, we had some coureurs de bois, we had the British Army, we had some pioneers at that time. Then when we jumped to the 1860s, even though it's a Western, we had a section of it that's in San Francisco, it's Civil War, the big ball gowns type of thing. You've got the seaport and you've got, you know, the seamen, the stevedores, you've got Chinatown, you've got merchants, you've got the middle class kind of thing. Then we got to the Western part when we go over to Nevada, then you've got, you know, the saloon, the cowboys, the miners, the frontier ladies, the ladies of the night, you have the sheriffs and all this. And then we also had some Mexicans of the time as well. So an incredible amount of research. I have, I'm a bookworm. I have books and books and books. And, you know, I'm the Imelda Marcos of books, I should say. So I always go into those, of course. And then there's Vigo kept sending us some Westerns and to watch and kind of say, okay, do you like this? Do you not like this? This is what I like. And just parts of it. So just to kind of get a texture and a feel of what we wanted to do. Then there's painters of the time that you look into and try and see and get some clues and some hints. There's costume parts, costume bits as well. The internet as well is an amazing now labyrinth that you can just jump into and go all sorts of places. What I love about any film or any time when you start is to dive in and go into these different worlds that you're perhaps not so familiar with, but it's just like exploring, and then you kind of get a real good feel for the silhouette and the shape of what it was then. But our bodies now are very different. But if you understand the main part of it, of what makes it that time period, then what pulses to do and what's important when you get to a certain thing, and then it's fun. And then you just try and create these characters and make them as real and as honest as can be. And hopefully, you know, the audience will just jump into the story and get involved in it.
You make it sound so like easy, like, because you're just
magical.
You know, but I'm like, this is a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
Research aspect. Yeah. Like, I'm just thinking of the sheer volume of info coming your way when you're doing all of this. And I'm like, my goodness. But thank you for that very thorough answer. That's awesome.
So jumping into characters, the character Vivian is a strong, passionate lead. She also has like a softness to her, I would say. How did you play on costuming Vivian through these like different, I guess, sides to her?
One of the things that Vigo really wanted to make sure was that this was a real and an honest film. And even though it's a big costume period film, that it wasn't heavy looking. So for Vivian, we start off like in the 1830s when she's a very young girl. And because she's the pulse of the film, it's more from her point of view, this whole storyline. I made her into kind of terracotta reds and more reds because she's the heart of it. Then you also have when you jump into the then in 1860s, 30 years later, and she's in San Francisco, then she's more into kind of salmony colors. So it just is kind of saturated down a little bit. And then the other huge question we had was to make it real was, how do you, like, she goes off and goes across all these mountains, like on the horse, and what does she bring on her horse? Then once she's in the middle of this desert out of, you know, Timbuktu, there isn't any stores you can go to. There's no Amazon that will deliver. There's a stagecoach that comes, you know, like once a month. And how many bolts of fabrics does he bring, you know, and how all of those things kind of came into mind when we then decided, okay, what is she bringing with her and what's the storyline? Then because she's also on a horse, and she's such an independent woman and, you know, free spirit, we actually got rid of the hoop skirt, the hoop petticoats, because that's quite restraining. And then we thought, well, if she gets on the horse with the hoop petticoat, it's a very different storyline we're going to be doing, because she just wears a very heavy petticoat then instead with no hoops. And then when she gets to Nevada into the desert and that harsh, harsh world, I saturated the colors even more and even softened her up even more so, just so that there's even a stronger juxtaposition with what she was facing, not just the nature, but also all of the men and all of the, you know, I don't want to put too many twists and turns and you know, say anything for the viewers before they see the film, but it was just to kind of contrast that even more so, which was kind of interesting. But I softened her lines and softened her up. But then I also put some kind of male elements in it for her independence, in that she starts to use like his hat instead of her bonnet. That goes away. I designed for Olsen, it's kind of like a Carhartt carpenter jacket, but a period one. And mm-hmm. she kind of starts wearing it, you know, sleeves turned up and with her skirt. So it's just of mixing those elements to kind of make her a really grounded and real character, hopefully.
Watching the film, I was really fascinated by how, you know, the different classes of people were represented and dressed. How'd you show that diversity through costuming? Are there any like tricks or things that you were doing so that the audience would know that distinct different levels of class?
I think because the film goes back and forth and it's not a linear story, I had kind of stronger color palettes for each of the different worlds. And I think that helps a little bit visually. Here in the 1830s, it's kind of the fall colors or maple leaves and very warm, very rich colors. And then when you're into San Francisco, there's a lot more kind of blues and greens and a little bit of purples there. And then when you're in Nevada, it's very earthy. It's just very saturated and earthy and more leathers there. So I think that was different worlds were kind mm-hmm. of there. Then the class system, I mean, fabrics tell so much. Richer fabrics and more, a little bit shinier or in San Francisco to the higher up. And then small, very small printed cotton for sure in Nevada. And that's probably where I tried to differentiate a little bit.
So you touched on this a little bit, but I would like to know, there are a lot of hats in the film. How many hats do you think you and your team went through? And then how, you touched on it a little bit, but how did you transition the style of hat throughout the film?
There is a lot of hats, yes. For Vivian, she starts off with a bonnet, which was very appropriate of the time. Then she has, when she's working in the market as a flower stall, there's a straw hat that she wears and with a ribbon to keep it on her head. And then once she's in the desert, now then she's more of a Stetsons type. The silhouette, I think the one thing that to try and really make sure also like the for the mostly when we're out in the West is that the cowboys, because they could all kind of start looking the same. And so definitely the shapes of hats and the different types of brims and different crowns and the height of it. And then the biggest thing, because of so many close-ups, and they always have a hat pretty much, it was really important, the stampede straps, which is the straps that hold the hats on if they're, you know, you're off in the wind and off on the horse and galloping away. And then the bauble that kind of holds it. And so that was little details that, or even just the strings themselves, like some of it is just flat leather, some of it was woven, some of it is flat, square, whatever. And so we really tried to give it some variance again, do you know what I mean? And then the wonderful thing is that we had also some Mexican cowboys. So, I mean, you had their hats that are just like, you know, beautiful and amazing. Yeah. And with the embroidery on those, it was like, wow, these are great.
That's so cool. Is continuity or duplicate something you get used to when working on a job like this, like a muscle memory that you no longer have to actively think about? Because we always are asking people about just all these various pieces you have to have of the same thing. Like how does that work when you're on a film or a job?
Hopefully you know in advance. So if you know you're going to have a stunt double or even if it's a stunt, the multiples of that. So for Weston, we had some multiples for him, stunt and for what happens. The same with Olson. You just build some different ones. And because in a period piece, you often, mostly for your background, you'll go and pull a lot of costumes. And for us, Mexico, because we shot most of it and prepped most of it in Mexico. And then we did a tiny couple of days in Ontario, in Canada, in the East Coast. And then we went to the West Coast, right in BC, and did the end of the film there for a couple of days. Mexico doesn't have a lot of big costume rental houses that are period. I had an association with Paris Costumes in Madrid, and they were incredibly helpful. So we actually, my assistant and I, went over to Madrid, to Spain, to pull. And pull. And like when you said about the hats, oh my God, we pulled hats and hats. and boots, you name it. And this was even at the very, very beginning of the film. It's even before we had a breakdown of locations, of extras, of knowing what kind of texture it is. But we kind of made lists and figured out, well, there's probably going to be maybe a maximum of this. So we did a lot of pulling there. And then the problem is, going back to your multiples, now if there's a piece that is like a gem that's there and you think, oh, this is a beauty, I've got to put that on a lead, and then you need multiples, well, you're a little screwed.
Yeah.
But depending on actors and so forth, but you can put it on another actor as long as it doesn't touch the skin. If there's a shirt underneath, if there's something underneath, they can wear the same jacket. It's just for sanitary, of course, that you can't have anything touching their skins on both actors or multiple actors. You can kind of get away a little bit for that if an actor is willing. The rest has to be all built and has to be multiples and footwear and you name it. So.
My goodness.
So again, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but there are a lot of darker colors, darker scenes. What kind of textiles or fabrications did you use to make these pieces like stand out in these like darker, dimmer lights, I guess? What are some tricks or textiles that you came across?
I mean, the thing is, like, it's like even like for a men's frock coat, I mean, a black men's frock coat was pretty standard at the time. And How do you make one different to the other? You don't, they don't all look like little bopping talking heads, you know? It's finding a fabric that has a little bit of texture, that some of it, the weave of it might have a little sheen, might have a little, for like Weston in his black frock coat, we found a fabric that was a really wonderful little check on it that was just color on color, the same color, but it just gave it a little bit of depth to it. For his vests, some of it is black velvet. Some of it is green, but a deep green. So it looks dark and ominous as his character is, but there's at least a little bit of depth in it. It's not totally flat. So it's probably one of the things how you go around it. For Olsen, because he's got like his checkered sack coat, I wanted something that would kind of, you could, you know, see him in a large background, like in the forest and so forth, that he would stand out, but without it being like bright red that you can go, there he is. So I found that fabric actually in Madrid and it was like perfect. And so we just washed it and over dyed it just a little bit. And so that worked well. For when we first find him at the port in San Francisco, he's by the boat. And originally I had him in a blue canvas jean frock coat. I thought, you know, he's a utilitarian man. He's a hardworking man. He's traveled across. He's not a fancy dandy, you know, in a nice fabric. But then realized we had blue screen. So he would have just melted and we couldn't use it. And I was like, no. We've already built one. We were building the stunts. So we had to pull the plug, start again. Then I had some canvas and then we dyed it and finally found a color that I liked. And then we started over again and did that. And I think in the end, it actually worked a lot better. But
is there a genre of work that you haven't yet costume designed that you would like to explore?
Oh, I haven't done a lot of science fiction. That could be interesting. Not the super suits. I'm not too much into super suits, but kind of like Dune, where you really do something like completely out of this world, would be interesting to do. I always love anything with music in it as well. So if that could be added to it, that would be like divine.
This is another question about your career, but what's been one of your most memorable accolades so far?
I don't know. I think the path is such an exciting journey, the whole thing, and it's very varied and everything is, it's always exciting when you get a new project. I would say the most interesting one will be the next one, whatever it may be.
And I'm going to continue with that is, if you weren't a costume designer, what else would you think you would have pursued?
I think maybe opening up a restaurant, which is just as mad. I think I would have loved to have been a chef or something.
What tips do you have for someone trying to break into the industry? Like, in particular, how do you get connected with the costume designer nowadays for an internship or an apprentice opportunity? Like, how would you help one of our listeners or someone out there who's wanting to do this and knows zero about, you know, where to start?
I say just try and get your foot in the door. Doesn't matter in what capacity within the costume department. Jump, do as much as you can in there. Be passionate about it. It's amazing down the road of experiences that you've done and how you can fuel on that and actually go back to some of those and understand. The designers will see who really is working and who is really involved, and they will then get promoted as you go by. And I would say also with social media and everything, follow people, send them messages. It's all about the timing and just keep at it. Eventually things will start happening and will fall into place, but do whatever you can in whatever capacity and dive into it and give it 150%.
So do you personally look into your messages? Like, if someone were to reach out to you, are you someone that, that's really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to take the time for it, I mean, I have to take the time backwards as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's lovely.
Perfect. Last question is, where can our listeners follow you, and what is next for Ann Dixon?
I have a website. It's Ann with an E dash Dixon, DIXON.com. So you can see a lot of my work that's there and different ways to go approaches in there as well. What's next? I have David Cronenberg film that I did, The Shrouds. We opened at Cannes, and it's now going to be opening at TIFF. And then it will go into the cinemas at some point. Then I'm passionately diving into that world, but I can't say yet what it is. But it will be very interesting, and it's based on a video game, and it's kind of turn of the century, other worlds, Nordic type of thing.
Nice.
That sounds thank really you. Fun.
That might be like, it's not, you know, in a year or so.
Might start.
And then there's other things that are happening, but nothing's green lit just yet. So a lot of tentacles. But
thank you for today, for joining us. Listeners, if you didn't know, she's all the way out in Canada. So we really appreciate your time today. And thank you for joining us on the DM and helping us see just a little bit, like a small peek into all of the very intense labor intensive work. Cause we hear, you know, we like to say that the costume designers are the unsung heroes. And we hope that that's actually something we can stop saying eventually, and that your song does begin to be heard much louder in the industry. But we just through our interviews, our knowledge of the industry, you guys are so invaluable to a project. There aren't movies and film and TV without the wardrobe. It's an inaugural part of the job. So we just sing your praises and are so happy to have someone like you here to give us a little bit of your time.
Well, it's been a complete pleasure. And as the thing goes, you know, naked without us is definitely the motto. And thank you very, very much both. To you, Audrey and Tyree, it's been a true pleasure.
Thank you, Anne. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, too.